Good afternoon. You're tuned in to a Juno Afternoon here on Wednesday, the 25th of February, the year 2015. Jeff Brown with you here today. We'll talk to Christine Fenner about the hospital's Blue Heron gift shop. Evelyn Buss will be here with details about this weekend's Carnival of Juno at the Hangar Ballroom. Tim Ortiz, Andrina, Donahue, and Brendan Howard will be coming on to talk about a new series called Art Talks at the Campus. And we'll talk with Mark Fox, tonight's speaker for the Alaska Design Forum. For the forecast for today, cloudy skies, patchy fog predicted for tonight with a slight chance of rain in the evening. Low temperatures around 33 degrees. Forecast for Thursday, decreasing clouds with high temperatures around 40 degrees. And the forecast for sunny, Friday, sunny skies with high temperatures around 41 degrees.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Southeast Alaska's largest tribal organization has authorized its courts to perform same-sex marriages. The decision was announced this week. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports from Juneau.
The Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska lists nearly 30,000 members in and outside of the state. Its new policy defines legal marriage in its tribal courts to be between two people, regardless of gender. President Richard Peterson, a Haida from the village of Kasan, says the council is exercising its governing authority to include all tribal members.
It's something that we can do to extend our sovereignty for all of our tribal citizenry. It's not just about the same-sex marriage and helping just one segment of our tribal citizens, but all of our tribal citizens.
Peterson says Central Council courts have not conducted marriages in the past, as far as he knows. He wants the new policy to encourage same and opposite-sex marriages. At least one party in a couple will have to be a tribal member. The marriage directive also includes divorces. For National Native News, this is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
A new graduate program is intended to help address leadership for those interested in working in tribal communities. KAWC's Stephanie Sanchez tells us more about the program.
Whether you are a working professional or tribal leader, one university offers a new graduate program which aims to strengthen the skills needed to run a successful tribal nation. Northern Arizona University in Flagstaff offers the Indigenous and Tribal Nation Building Graduate Certificate. The program is part of a larger effort of Native nations to improve community life and at the same time preserve their culture. NAU's Director of Applied Indigenous Studies, Chad Hamill, says the program was created in response to tribal leaders who say there is a need for specialized skills in their government systems. Hamill says the program will offer the training needed for those who are currently working with tribal governments or plan to become professionals working in Indigenous communities.
The hope is that this is going to contribute to a resurgence of Native nations across the country. There already are signs that in terms of sovereignty and self-determination, there's great progress being made, and so I think this program stands to contribute to that and build stronger Native nations.
Some of the coursework offered are Indigenous law and policy, tribal environmental management, and financial management. Hamill says students can earn their certificate in a year. The program starts this fall and requires 18 credit hours. For National Native News, I'm Stephanie Sanchez.
The Bureau of Indian Affairs is releasing revised guidelines involving the Indian Child Welfare Act. Kevin Washburn, Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, made the announcement Tuesday to tribal leaders gathered in Washington, D.C. The guidelines are intended to support the purpose of ICWA to keep Indian children with Indian families. It provides guidance to state courts to help ensure full implementation of the law. Native organizations, tribal leaders, and advocates have been calling for ICWA to be enforced. In recent years, high-profile cases involving Native children in South Dakota, Oklahoma, and Alaska have drawn attention to the issue. According to the BIA, this is the first such update to the guidelines in more than 30 years. A public gathering is being held Friday in Ottawa to address the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Indigenous organizations and a university are hosting the event. It's taking place as a national roundtable is happening with governments. The public gathering is meant to spur dialogue on solutions and recommendations to end violence against Native women in Canada. A closed gathering for family members is planned for Thursday. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4, 2015 at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com. The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes to Albuquerque the Tribal Telecom May 4th, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. Information on services and Tribal Telecom 2015 at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 6 minutes after the hour, and you are tuned in to KTUO News in Juneau and KRNN-FM in Juneau. With me in the studio is Christina Finner. She's the manager for the Blue Heron Gift Shop. And if you're not familiar with the Blue Heron Gift Shop, I just come to educate you. It's at the Bartlett Regional Hospital. Christina, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Thanks, my pleasure.
So tell me about the Blue Heron Gift Shop, please.
So the gift shop is a nonprofit shop. It's located just off the main lobby at the Bartlett Regional Hospital. And it is run by the Bartlett Regional Hospital Foundation. So we provide gifts for patients and hospital employees, and everything that we earn goes back into the hospital.
How big is it?
It's a tiny little shop, just off the lobby. Not a lot of space, but a lot of really interesting items. Pretty much something for everyone.
What are some of your most popular items?
Well, probably candy.
At the hospital, we think they'd have something healthy.
Well, we try. We do. We have some nice healthy snacks as well. But, most of our most of who we serve are hospital employees. And, everybody needs a little sugar to get through the day. So
I like it myself. Other popular items?
We have traditional gifts, cards, gifts for new babies and patients. We just recently started carrying candy bouquets, which are a really great gift for somebody who's in the hospital. We have jewelry and all sorts of really great gifts.
How do you select the items to put in your inventory?
I just started a consignment program, so we're trying to get some local artists and artisans to have stuff there. So that's been a process of seeing what works in the shop. But it really is just sort of picking things that, are appealing to me and that I think will be appealing to other people and seeing if it works.
Cool. You're here today to talk about the Last Friday event.
Mm-hmm. We're having a really great event. It's this Friday. Starts at 6, and we are teaming up with the Southeast Radiation Oncology Center. The event will sort of start, they'll have some friends and they have a small healthcare fund that will go to locations and use that to come to the gallery.
Pretty much on the hospital grounds here.
Right. So I don't have the address right in front of me here.
And you're looking for artists to stock work in your shelves here.
Right. We've just been focusing on extending our consignment program, and so we wanted to show off some of the new artists that we've gotten through expanding the consignment program.
What are some of the artists you're dealing with now?
Some of the artists are Levita Luce, M.K. McNaughton, Amanda Faith. So some well-known local names.
And if our artists are interested in stocking or helping you stock your shelves, how can they contact you?
They can go to our website, and you can find our contact information there, or you can call us at the Bartlett Foundation.
All right, Christina, thank you for coming in today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I think you covered it.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 25th of February, 2015. It was on this day, 1570, Queen Elizabeth I was excommunicated from the Roman Catholic Church and declared a heretic, whereupon Parliament declared it treason to call the Queen a heretic, which put English Catholics in a bind. They had to choose between renouncing their loyalty to the Catholic Church or paying heavy fines for committing treason. Elizabeth had tolerated Catholics worshipping in private, but when Catholic rebellions broke out in northern England and Ireland, her government began persecuting Catholics, rounding up Jesuit priests and killing them on the grounds that they were conspiring against England with Spain. It's the birthday of Anthony Burgess, Manchester, England, 1917, diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor when he was about 40, given a year to live. He wrote at a furious pace, produced 5 novels during that year, and at the end of it, he didn't die. In fact, he lived for 30-plus more years, produced 30 more books, including the one he's most famous for, A Clockwork Orange. Eventually, lung cancer claimed him in 1993. Anthony Burgess, who said, "The ideal reader of my novels is a lapsed Catholic and a failed musician, short-sighted, colorblind, auditorily biased, who has read the books that I have read." It was on this day, 1919, Oregon became the first state to levy a gasoline tax. They had launched a Get Oregon Out of the Mud campaign to build better highways, and a Republican state legislator, Loyal Graham, hit upon the gas tax as a way to make the people who use the roads pay for them. Within 10 years, all 48 states had levied gasoline taxes. It's the birthday of Larry Gelbart, Chicago, 1928, who wrote the long-running TV series MASH, also the Broadway musical A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, and the movies Oh God and Tootsie. It's the birthday of Frank Chin, Berkeley, 1940, author of The Chicken Coop Chinaman, in which he wrote, "I am the natural-born rag-mouth, speaking the motherless bloody tongue, no real language of my own to make sense with, so out comes everybody else's trash that don't conceive. I am a Chinaman, a miracle synthetic, drip-dry and machine-washable." And it's the birthday of George Harrison, Liverpool, 1943, the youngest of 4 children of Harold and Louise, and the youngest of the 4 Beatles, joined the band when he was only 14. The other Beatles tended to treat him like a kid brother. He only got 2 tracks on each Beatles album, and when the band split in 1970, he put out a triple album, All Things Must Pass. His memoir, I, Me, Mine, came out in 1980, dedicated to gardeners everywhere. Here's a poem for today by Rita Dove entitled Dawn Revisited. Imagine you wake up with a second chance. The blue jay hawks his pretty wares, and the oak still stands, spreading glorious shade. If you don't look back, the future never happens. How good to rise in sunlight, in the prodigal smell of biscuits, eggs and sausage on the grill. The whole sky is yours to write on, blown open to a blank page. Come on, shake a leg. You'll never know who's down there frying those eggs if you don't get up and see. A poem by Rita Dove, Dawn Revisited, from On the Bus with Rosa Parks, published by Norton and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org, and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Engineered by Noah Smith, produced by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
It's about 15 minutes past the hour, and you are tuning in to KTUO News in Juneau and KRNN FM in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Evelyn Buss here from the Juno Co-op Preschool to talk about an event called the Carnival of Juno. It's happening Saturday, February 28th at the Hangar Ballroom. Evelyn, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
First of all, tell us about the Juno Co-op Preschool.
The Juno Co-op Preschool is an awesome place. It's been in the community for over 30 years, and it's, I think, a play-based preschool where the teachers are just, I mean, I can't emphasize how skilled they are at working with the kids and helping the kids to grow, like at the moment they're ready to advance kind of their thinking about things. The teachers are right there with them to help with that. And it's a parent, there's some parent involvement in the preschool, hence being a co-op. And so when you have a work day, so when you're there in that morning with your kids, there's so much learning that happens for parents too from watching these skilled teachers working with the kids and working with groups of kids as to how to get along and how to how to keep things moving smoothly. It's really a wonderful environment.
Some adults could use that information as well.
Yeah, it's been very helpful.
So what age range are the kids?
The kids are from 3 to 5 years old. 3 to 5.
Where is it located?
It's located, it's in the lower floor of the Northern Lights Church, so down in the flats downtown.
But you're having an event that's specifically not for kids coming
that's
up on
right.
Saturday.
This is not for kids. So it's coming this Saturday, February 28th. It's at the Hangar Ballroom from 9 to 12, and it's Susu and the Prophet so generously donated their time. Their sound person, Austin Osterhout, donated his time. So that they could play this event for us. And they're an incredible band. They play covers of classic rock, so everything from Adele to the Black Eyed Peas to the Rolling Stones. And I have been, I guess, a little bit not so much in the social life since I started having kids a few years back, but I did one time go out, and I was at the Alaskan and heard this amazing song. It was before I think I'd knew who Adele was, and it was just so beautiful. I was just stopped in my tracks, and it was Shona from Susu and the Prophets singing, and it was Susu and the Prophets. They were amazing, so I'm really looking forward to it. I think it's going to be super fun. And the hangar was generous enough to donate the ballroom to us for the evening, so we're pretty much, you know, this is just going to be a wonderful event to benefit the preschool. We're really wanting to do events that the whole community can come to. And so this one is an adult-focused event that I think is going to be so super fun. It's based off of Carnival. So the idea of ushering out winter and dancing in the spring. And it's, I think it's really going to be a fun party.
It'd be good if winter ever arrived in the first place.
True.
What is the cost to get in?
It's $10 cover. And then there will be raffle tickets for sale there. There will be a small silent auction. And we're going to have some prizes for the most winter-defying outfit and the best costume. And so there have been a number of organizations in Juneau. You know, in addition to the hangar, that it was so generous to give us the space, and the Susu and the Prophets for doing the music, there are a number of organizations in town that have given us gift certificates for our raffle and silent auction and for the costume and outfit prizes. Including for our raffle, we have a helicopter flight for two from North Star. We also have one from Era Helicopters. We have a whale watching tour for two from Allen Marine. We have a gift certificate from Silverbow, a gift basket from Heritage. Capital Cafe gave us lunch for two. That's just the raffle. So there's a number of organizations downtown that that have been so generous to us.
Yeah. I always like to encourage people who hear businesses' names when they go into the business to thank the business for helping out the community.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we plan to have their names up prominently at the event so people can see just who it was that has helped us out for this event.
So the Carnival of Juno happening this Saturday. What time does it start?
It starts at 9 p.m. and it goes till midnight, yeah.
Evelyn Buss, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
I don't think so. Is it okay if I just go over real quickly the silent auction that we have? And let me add one more thing for the raffles. Actually, one of our parents generously donated a Kindle, too, so that's another thing we have. For the silent auction, we have a Wings gift certificate to go out to Taku Lodge. We have a beautiful dessert from Abby's. We have a Baranoff gift certificate. They actually gave us a gift certificate for a night at the hotel and then breakfast in the morning. We have a tea set, a ceramic set. I think a pretty high-end waterproof rain skirt is coming in as well. So just a few really interesting things. And then we have some costume prizes. So the most winter-defying outfit and a costume prize. We have a Heritage gift certificate and a Shoofly gift certificate so far. So, and I think we might have one other gift certificate that I'm spacing on. But it is just, I think, going to be such a fun event.
And who's going to be the auctioneer?
It's actually going to be a silent auction.
I guess that's it.
Yeah.
As it happens when you have a silent auction, you don't have an auction yet.
Right.
Emily Beth, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Minutes past the hour, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau and KRNN FM in Juneau. Got some time to give you a little preview of what's happening on Mudrooms on tomorrow night at 7 o'clock on KTUO News.
Our next speaker tonight is James Marcus. James Marcus is a natural-born explorer and wayfinder. He just returned last week from a three-month trip around the world, where he spent 2 months on the island of Sumatra, a few weeks in Eastern Europe, and one night in Iceland. James was raised amidst the beaches, swamps, and general chaos of South Florida for the majority of his life, and thus is glad to have escaped and is proud to have called Juneau his home for the past 5 years. A full-blown map addict and bookworm from the start, he was drawn to study geography and history while at university. He's applied that knowledge through varied professional pursuits, including community planning, computer mapping, environmental conservation, nonprofit management, and he's even worked as a pizza chef and once sold Cutco knives for a summer. Never mind. He's currently working as a substitute teacher and has resumed his regular Thursday night radio show on KXLL, the James Radio Hour. Please welcome James.
It's actually pretty hard for me to narrow down the story, one story from my travels. And, you know, it took a lot of time for me to collect my thoughts, but I think I figured out one that I want to tell. Now, I'm not going to tell you a story about all the flights and the trains and the planes and the automobiles that I've missed or just barely made over the years. I'm not going to tell you the story of how I almost drove a scooter off a cliff in Sumatra 2 years ago. I'm not going to tell you the story of how, you know, I got decompression sickness after scuba diving down to a shipwreck at 180 feet. And I'm not going to tell you the story about the time my buddies and I got stranded in the middle of the Everglades, paddled over 40 miles in 2 days to make it home for Thanksgiving. And I won't tell you the story about how I got within 3 arms' length of an angry semi-wild orangutan in Sumatra. Those stories are for another time and place. Now, this story is about the 4 most important lessons that I've learned in my travels. And I hope it inspires you to pursue your adventures, whatever they may be. The first lesson is never try, never know. It's my favorite saying from my time in Indonesia, and it exemplifies my overall attitude towards life. Traveling really opens your mind and forces your perceptions to change. And the world is not so much of a scary place once you turn off your screen. Living under Sharia law in Aceh province for 2 months really helped me gain a better understanding and gain a wholehearted respect for Islamic cultures, while seeing the firsthand effects of totalitarian regimes in Poland, Hungary, and in Cambodia. Truly opened my eyes to the horrific depths of depravity that humans are capable of. Seeing and experiencing these places only reinforced my belief that people around the globe share more commonalities than differences, mostly desire to live a comfortable, peaceful existence. Number two, there's no better time than now. We all have our excuses for why we can't travel as much as we'd like. Our societal obligations, our jobs, the things we own, etc. But if you want to make it happen, you will. There's never been a cheaper time to travel the world. We live in an amazing time in history that allows us to cross oceans in hours and to video chat with friends and family on the other side of the globe. For better or worse, the world we live in is changing so fast and right before our very eyes. Just in the last 2 years, two brand new airports sprung up in the cities of Medan and Kuala Lumpur to replace the crowded and aging infrastructure that I traveled through only 2 years ago. Unfortunately, there are landscapes, cultures, species, and entire ecosystems that may not survive the changes that lie ahead. See them while you can. Number three, traveling forges connections with our global society. Here in Juneau, it's easy to forget that the world outside exists beyond those mountains and clouds. We're so isolated here that a trip to Haines is an ordeal. A trip to Seattle feels like you need to go through customs. But it's a big, wide world out there. And I think that traveling to foreign lands and engaging with different people and soaking in different cultures renews the human spirit. Whether befriending fellow travelers and road warriors, or hanging out with locals and understanding how they live. I've made friends around the globe. I'll never forget being invited to a traditional Saman dance and learning about black magic in the Gayo Highlands of Sumatra. Or tasting the underground craft brew scene in Krakow, Poland, and finding Juneau's own Alaskan smoked porter on the shelf. Through our stories and experiences, traveling brings a slice of Juneau to the world, and a slice of the world back to Juneau. Number four, traveling really makes you appreciate Juneau and how special of a place it actually is. I heard a saying a few years ago from someone. They said, well, Juneau never looks prettier than when you're on a flight out or when you're coming back home after a long trip. I cannot agree more, and I'm glad to be back here amongst familiar surroundings and friendly faces. And after traveling around the world and seeing some amazing landscapes, I was truly amazed last week as I flew in on a bluebird day how astoundingly beautiful our town is. And you truly recognize that when you've been away for a couple months. There's a reason why 1.2 million tourists visit our community each year. We truly live in one of the last wild places on earth, and we should do everything we possibly can to keep it that way. We should also consider how we can make our community more attractive to independent travelers. And after traveling for the last 3 months and being a tourist, I've gained a new respect for tourists and people who work in the tourism industry. That's given me a unique perspective on our summer season here. Those waddling cruise ship passengers on South Franklin, well, they're living out their Alaskan dreams, just as we are here all year round. In summation, if you want to travel, it's simple. Save the money, take the time, buy the ticket, and go. You'll figure out the rest when you get there. And the final lesson that I learned in my travels, the next time I travel around the world, I'm not going to buy a return ticket.
As James Marcus recorded live at this February's Mudrooms, the whole event will be on the air on KTOO News at 7 o'clock on Thursday night. In the studio now we have representatives from the Canvas, Brendan Howard, Tim Ortiz, and Andreana Donahue, talking about an event called Art Talks. It's happening this Friday night at the Canvas at 5:30. Thank you, everybody, for coming today.
Hey, thanks for having us, Jeff.
Thank you.
So, Brendan, do you want to talk about the event in general? And
yeah, absolutely. So the Canvas is very lucky to be having two guest artists up for the next year. They're going to be teaching classes at the Canvas. We have Tim Ortiz and Andreana Donahue, and they're going to be here for the year. They're coming from Las Vegas. They both have excellent art backgrounds. Andreana, she works in sculpture, lots of textiles, paper, as well as painting. She's a former gallery owner. And Tim Ortiz, his background is in painting, but currently he's teaching a graphite still life class at the Canvas. So throughout the year, they're going to be offering a lot of different classes for the community, and just bringing a lot of value to our community of Juno. And the idea of the event was to introduce them to Juno and give Juno an opportunity to come visit with them and hear Tim and Andreana speak about their art and about their process. We're also really fortunate at the Canvas to have them because they did something that is really unique. They traveled around the country visiting 22 other studios that are similar to the Canvas in that they work with artists who experience developmental disabilities. So that kind of made the relationship a real natural one. It made a lot of sense for us to bring these two up for the year. So the event is Friday at 5:30, and it's just a great way to learn more about these artists and to, you know, continue the conversation about art within this community.
Dear Andreana, what are you going to do to start the conversation?
Well, we're going to be talking about our artwork. We'll be having a show down there in the Canvas Gallery in July. So to sort of introduce ourselves to the community, we'll be talking about the work that we do. So I'll be talking about my paintings, my process, and how I ended up working in the way that I do, and Andreana.
Yeah, so I'll be talking about my sculptural work, which I make out of everyday materials, primarily paper and cardboard. And my focus is on narrative, which just means telling a story. A lot of my artwork reflects my personal ideas, and I'm really interested in combining different narratives to tell a new story.
When you do a narrative, do you tell the person what to think, or do you expect them to develop their own story from there?
No, I like to suggest a story, not really spell it out. I like the viewer to sort of make up what is going on.
How do you pull the artist out of people?
Really, it's just getting to know each particular artist and gauging what their strengths and weaknesses are, and helping them focus on their strengths and minimizing their weaknesses. For me, that's my style.
Tim?
I work in the same way. I look for what it is people are interested in. I look for their tendencies in simple sort of projects and exercises, and then try to help them to focus on and expand on those creative tendencies.
How about you, Brendan?
Oh, in my teaching?
Yeah.
You know, in my teaching, so much of what I've done, it's a mechanical process, teaching people working with clay, wheel throwing. I guess I look at utility and function and pair that with aesthetics. You know, I think it's important for something to fit in its place, and work with the space that it's going to be functioning in. I guess that's basically a long-winded way of saying, you know, having bowls that look good in your house, or a mug that you like. But so much of my teaching has been less about the aesthetics and more about the process. I teach a lot of beginning wheel class. Getting to watch Tim and Andriana, you know, they're working with the artists that we have at the Canvas. They're in working in the studio with them often, and helping them in so many different mediums. I'm actually a little bit envious getting to watch them work, because so many times the processes that I'm teaching are so mechanical, and they're getting to appeal more to a tangible artistic teaching process.
I'm thinking that when you're working with someone with developmental disabilities, it must be special, that moment where they finally click and they understand what they're doing.
Yeah, it is exciting. That's what we find exciting about it. And it's especially exciting because for that population, it's not often that they're able to really find a voice, or that they've been able to do work where they can create something that's competitive with things being created by people who are not living with developmental disabilities. And so in the studio, when that happens, they become peers to us as artists. And we start to communicate in a higher level, which is really very exciting. And it's the reason we've been so interested in this kind of work, and traveling around, exploring how it's done, because it's really fantastically important to art in general, I think.
Right. And also, many of the artists we work with, they are nonverbal, so making art is their only way of communicating. And there are a lot of artists who are now being recognized, having museum shows in New York, who are artists living with disabilities.
What kind of differences are there in teaching and working with someone with developmental disabilities compared to somebody who is not?
Well, working with people that do not have developmental disabilities is new to me. I haven't really done that as much. I've been working with artists with developmental disabilities for a few years, and I really haven't done that many classes with people who do not have developmental disabilities. And I find that it's working with people without developmental disabilities is a lot more about getting them past their fear of making art, whereas the advantage that the artists with disabilities have is they're so used to not really knowing what's expected of them that they're able to get past that sort of false barrier that people believe is there when they make art. Because the truth is that what we really want is for them to make art without having that fear, without feeling that there's an expectation other than their own design. So with people who do not have developmental disabilities, it's all about just getting them to be more confident and to have faith in their own interests and their own tendencies.
I think it's really special you're working with such an outstanding crew at the Canvas. Everybody who works there is really committed to what they're doing, and they've come up with something that really, really works. And you've been to places like this. What you've seen so far, how unique is the Canvas?
The Canvas is very unique, and that's why we ended up coming up to the Canvas, actually. Like Brandon mentioned, we saw 22 different studios, and it's unique, especially in that it's integrated. Providing the community classes right in the studio is a really important progressive step for these studios to make. So that had a lot to do with it. And we've appreciated working for the Canvas very much. We feel like everybody is very committed to the mission there. Yeah.
And there are many really great artists who are making a lot of excellent work there.
Friday at 5:30, it happens at the Canvas. What's going to be happening?
Well, we're going to be speaking, giving a presentation, both of us, about our own work.
And how do you open the conversation to deeper subjects?
We're open to have some conversation develop at the event. Definitely, we're open to that. We're interested in sharing what we do and learning more about the community through this discussion.
Should be an exciting year.
Oh, yeah.
Anything you want to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Yeah, you just mentioned it. It's going to be an exciting year, and it really is. We have a lot of things planned for the coming year, and we're certainly going to leverage having Andreana and Tim here with us in Juneau. They're going to be teaching several classes, so if you're interested in taking a class with Tim or Andreana, stop by or give us a call. Check out the website. In April, we're going to be showing a curated show by the artists that we work with at the Canvas. And along with that, Tim and Andreana introduced me to a documentary called Share My Kingdom that focuses on three artists, incredible artists who experience disabilities. And they're going to do a brief talk about some of the other studios that they visited. They're going to give a brief talk before the film. We're going to be showing that film after the opening in April. So that's April 3rd. It'll be at the Gold Town. We're just really thrilled to have them here.
All right. I want to thank Tim Ortiz, Andrea Donahue, and Brendan Howard for being guests today on the Juneau Afternoon program. Friday at 5:30 at the Canvas. No charge to get in.
Correct.
Anything you'd like to add?
No, sir.
Thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Today, winter still holds sway over much of North America. Trees are bare. Spring wildflowers and the songs of most birds are still months away. But well south of the equator, in Argentina, it's summer and birds are in full voice. Argentina's national bird, the rufous hornero, belts out a rapid trill. It's a rusty brown bird, the size of a towhee. From the woods nearby, a lovely song breaks forth. It's a rufous-bellied thrush, a near look-alike of our robin. In northeastern Argentina, a strange sound echoes through the mountain forest. It's a male red-ruffed fruit crow booming out its display calls. Although black and crow-sized, with a gleaming red chest, the fruit crow is no kin to our crows, but a cousin of South American bellbirds. Finally, the cheerful bubbly notes of an ultramarine grosbeak are a reminder that our spring and the arrival of birds like the rose-breasted grosbeak isn't too far off. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
I am a storyteller. My life is a story. My history, my culture, my actions are all part of my story. You are a storyteller too. If you or someone you love is a victim of violence or is acting violently, we can change your story. We can stop the violence. Asking for help changes everything.
Together, we can make a difference. Visit dps.alaska.gov/cdvsa.
It's about 15 minutes before the hour. You are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau and Carinan FM in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guest is Diane Antea, here to talk about Chamber Music Nights happening this Sunday, March 1st at Northern Light Church. Diane, thank you very much for coming today.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
So this is put on by the Juneau String Ensembles. Can you please describe the groups?
Sure. Juneau String Ensemble is a nonprofit youth organization for string musicians in town. Performing at the event on Sunday night will be kids, 39 kids, and one important adult that I'll save for the end. 39 kids ranging in age from third grade to 12th grade.
39 kids, that's amazing.
Yeah, and they come from all the schools, homeschool, charter school, all the programs. So it's a nice slice of the community.
What kind of music will they be playing?
You'll hear music from classical composers like Haydn, Vivaldi, Schumann, and Lennon. than John.
John Lennon. Okay.
Yes, absolutely. There's a little something for everyone. There's even some music from Andrew Lloyd Webber as well.
What are the ages of the musicians?
Well, they range from third grade, what is that, like 10, up to 18. And we have some special guests with us. There will be two large ensembles. There's a string quartet. And joining the string quartet, Crimson Quartet, will be the 2013 Junior Concerto winner, Kyle Farley Robinson. And the five of them will play together Schumann's quintet. In addition, we have a real treat of a guest soloist from Fairbanks. Dr. Brian Hall will be coming down and he'll be featured on the solo work for Vivaldi's Spring and Autumn, and three movements for each of those. So it's going to be a night of really fantastic music. It's always a high level of music. The kids work for it all year. But this year with our special guest, it's going to be even better than ever.
And what time does it all start?
It all starts at 7 o'clock Sunday evening. And the day of the week is a little different from our tradition. We usually go for Saturday night, but we opted for Sunday night this year. So it's 7 o'clock. It's the same familiar location, Northern Lights United Church. And the tickets are reasonably priced. They are $15 per person. And a family can come in for $40, and children kindergarten and under are free.
All right, that sounds fantastic, happening Sunday night. What time again did you say it started?
7 o'clock Sunday night. There's two parts, an intermission, and at the end there will be a delightful dessert reception. So we hope to see much of the community. It's a wonderful chance to hear some fine musicians.
Diane and Taya, thank you very much for coming by. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
I think you've covered it, Jeff. Thanks so much for the chance to share our good news.
Brand new CD to the station, Vivaldi by Avi Avital, on the Deutsche Grammophon label. Time is 10 minutes before the hour. You are tuned in to KRNN FM in Juneau, KTUO News in Juneau, here on a Juneau afternoon. Mark Fox is an artist from New York City. He's talking tonight at 6 o'clock at 360 Studio downstairs at the KTUO building as part of the Alaska Design Forum series. Mark, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
My pleasure.
So you're from New York City.
I live in New York City now, yes. I'm originally from Ohio.
What brings you to Alaska?
The Alaska Design Forum, I received an email a while ago, and they were interested in my work and how it fits into this year's theme of the Alaska Design Forum, and they wanted to bring me up, and I've never been to Alaska, so I said yes. Thought it was a great opportunity.
Your work seems to involve mixed media. Do you have a favorite kind of medium?
It's a great question.
When you say mixed, there's lots of stuff out there.
Yeah, it's a lot. I work in a variety, and they don't necessarily mix together. I sort of jump around from media to media. I think I always consider myself a draftsman or a drawer. I love paper. Most of my work is based on paper, whether I'm drawing or painting or cutting or sculpting. But I also do puppet theater and video work, and I also work in steel. So it does change quite a bit.
I looked on your website. You do a great deal of work with wire.
Yes.
Can you describe one of your wire pieces?
The wire, well, actually the wire I use to hold up, they're mostly armatures. So I use the wire to create forms that are holding other pieces together, like mostly paper. So I'll cut out tons of images, and then each one will be suspended by a wire from the wall. And so, for example, I did a piece that was a drawing of everything I owned, life size. So I drew everything I owned to scale, and then I cut all that out, and then I suspended it from the wall with wire. Each drawing that was cut out, you know, could have anywhere from 2 to 10 pieces of wire. So it was a mix of paper and the sort of nest behind it of wire.
When you work in mixed media, does your choice of media have to do anything with your state of mind?
That's a good question. I think it used to be that people worked in one medium and they considered themselves either painters or sculptors, or they worked with steel. And I tend to think of different ideas and what medium works best for that. So for me, if I'm going to work with something to say about the figure or a person, it doesn't really make sense for me to make a painting of a person, because I see that as sort of a still in time. And so so I decided, well, what's the best way to work with time and the figure? And you could do it with video, you could do it with film, but I chose to do puppet theater based on the fact that the stories I were telling were about manipulation. So the best way to talk about manipulation and the figure was to manipulate figures. And so that kind of idea of marrying the idea and the theme with the medium to talk about, you know, so they combine to make the best message, I think, is why I jump around.
When you talk about puppet theater, are you talking about stick puppets, marionette puppets?
Yeah, I guess I should clarify. It's I use all kinds of puppets, but I don't want you to think it's the Muppets. It was not really for children. It's an adult theater. You know, in other countries, puppet theater is a form of art, and even in like Japan, they hold it on the level that we would hold opera. And so I was interested in how different cultures came to use the puppet. And I found out that basically related to how those cultures understood their deities. So I began to use different kinds of puppetry, whether it's marionettes or like a Japanese bunraku or shadow puppets or stick puppetry, to talk about the kind of manipulation I wanted to talk about. So if I was talking about, say, a god that was sort of a more of a Western god that was, then I would use a marionette because that is an unseen god from above sort of manipulating the world, or that's kind of the idea of the marionette. Where other forms of puppetry, like Japanese bunraku, the puppeteer is in full view of the audience, and you see the puppeteer and the puppet together, and it becomes more of a dance together to make the story as opposed to a sort of a dominant force.
And the puppets' characters, are they gods, animals, humans?
All of that. I think it's the perfect medium to talk about those relationships between all of those figures. It really ends up being why it's so powerful, and I have to say I think it's a very powerful medium, is because those puppets end up being a kind of empty vessel. We know they're not alive. But in order to make the story work, you know, you have to give up a certain amount of, you have to spend reality, and you have to sort of play in the part of the game. And so you become part of the play itself. You enter into the play on a level in which you're investing a part of yourself.
Watching a puppet show is interesting. At times you're watching the puppet, then you're watching the puppeteer, then you switch back to watching the puppet.
Yes.
What is the narrative? Is it spoken word? Is it music?
I'm incredibly shy. So when I started out, there was no words whatsoever.
That's why radio is good.
that is true. And I was coming from painting, of like a visual arts background with painting and the narrative form. So I was making paintings that actually moved through manipulation, through strings and rods and magnets. And that slowly grew, and no words. So they're very surrealistic landscapes with figures moving through them. There was a story being told, but it wasn't a linear sort of, you know, A, B, C format. It was more of I'm setting a mood and a quasi-narrative. And then they eventually grew into life-size puppets, full-stage presentations with live music and spoken word. And one piece was written by a poet, and he's off to the side of the stage reading for an hour his poetry.
Mark Fox, part of the Alaska Design Forum series of speakers. You've been talking tonight at 6 o'clock downstairs in the KTOA building at Studio 360. Thank you very much for coming by today. Is there anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, please come by tonight, 6 o'clock.
Weather forecast for tonight, cloudy skies, decreasing clouds predicted for Thursday with high temperatures around 38 degrees. Forecast for Friday, sunny weather with high temperatures around 41 degrees. Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with high temperatures around 41 degrees. Saturday night and Sunday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain and snow. Low temperatures around 32 degrees.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast.